Today is a best of on success from outside the box thinking from interviews with Andrew Erneman, Shaw Wolf, and Avery Carl, all just as different from one another as they are in their approach to their businesses. Andrew is the top real estate agent in Aspen, Colorado. He is consistently breaking sales records, including at the forefront of COVID, before the market came back, and before any of us knew what was to come. He did it using digital solutions and the right conversations. Shaw is an agent in Muskoka, Canada, a market with a short season and no sense of urgency. Shaw looked at what most brokers saw as a problem, and he found an approach that created massive opportunity, eliminated any competition, and made him the number one agent in his market. Last but not least, Avery Carl, perhaps the truly unique broker of us all. Avery's business is not the typical luxury business, and yet she is streamlined to selling over $150 million a year in less than 5 years in the business. Avery has not only a unique market, but her approach to win and serve clients is just as unique and nothing short of brilliant.
Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. This podcast was created for real estate agents across the country to come together, sharing ideas to take your, their, and our business to the next level.
First, from episode 183, Andrew Erneman, killing it with a lethal combination of habit and creativity.
Don't do that same level of diligence or homework when they're selecting a real estate broker. I think people in general just honestly think so lowly of our profession or that we're all the same. And it's just literally, I need a broker to slap my home into the MLS and take some photos, or I need a broker to chauffeur me around and show me some homes versus somebody who can add value to the situation. So I spend a lot of my time helping my clients see where I'm not just an ordinary real estate broker, where I am an advisor. I can offer them hopefully more, and whether that's experience or expertise or just rationale or whatever it is, to where they see me as that trusted source, and then they refer me. So that's what most of my focus on is these days. How do I do that in a new way, a professional way, and keep excited about it?
Well, and how do you do that?
Constantly changing. So I'm restless. Yeah. I mean, every, I'd say 18 months to 2 years, I feel like I need to reinvent and do something new. And, you know, good examples of that are 5 years ago, just feeling like virtual reality tours were not adopted in our market yet. And frankly, weren't adopted widely around the US at the time. So I opened a virtual reality showroom. I didn't know nothing about all the technology, but I literally went from zero to 100, where I had learned about touchscreen TVs and Oculus Rift virtual reality goggles and Matterport and Spinatic tools. Wow. So it got me jazzed, and I had all of a sudden this beautiful unbranded showroom. It was called the Aspen Property Experience. And now I say was, because I literally just handed it over to my partner and he's moved his business in there. Again, because I got kind of wanting to go another direction, but it was a great way to learn a whole new facet of the business.
There is some creativity under those analytics.
A little bit, yeah. There's a little bit.
Those analytical tendencies. Yeah, we found it.
For sure. So that's a good example. Most recently, I rebranded my website, AspenReimagined.com, and put on there...
AspenReimagined.com.
Yes.
Okay.
And put on there my approach to listing properties and some creative ways to try and list properties to resonate with sellers who don't want the norm of let's just go into the MLS and like everybody else wait for the buyers to show up. And I'm still building out the market report part of that site. And I've got some new ideas that are, the juices are flowing. My creative time is usually every morning around 6-ish. I'm up hiking, biking, or skinning up the mountain. And that's my exercise, but really my meditation. And that's when I get my brain clear and start getting good ideas. And if I'm really busy with deals and transactions or crappy clients or whatever it is, that takes up my brain time. But when that's not filling my brain, the creative part goes for sure.
We discovered it. I knew it was in there.
You pulled it out of me.
You combine that with
the data, the organization. Now, I think you're pretty, from what I understand, you're pretty regimented or ritualistic, whatever word we would want to use for that.
I like to have my routine for sure. I operate well with the routine. So my days are, I kind of joke Groundhog Day, but it's a great life and great days. So I can't complain.
Well, there's a saying that through discipline, I don't know what to say, but what comes to mind, like through discipline comes, that's where the freedom is. You know, most of us want to do what we want to do, but the way to get to do what you want to do is to have your rituals and your discipline that free you up for room to do what you want to do.
There's the other side of that too, which I've heard is don't be the person who just has to organize the colored pencils in the right order all day before they can get anything else done. And sometimes I have to remind myself, it's great to be organized and have my systems, which I'm big on having efficient systems in place for myself and my team and in my life in general. But sometimes I have to remind myself, okay, I can stop filing and organizing things the way I want them and actually get down to real work.
Yeah. Sometimes I would go the opposite because I do the work so much. I'm like, okay, I can't get work done efficiently because nothing's organized.
Isn't that the beauty though of this right. business for sure? Many others is it, I mean, there, I've met so many different personality types that are super successful at this business in so many different ways and use different tools or just personality. So, I mean, that's what's cool about it.
Well, I think in this business, the book, I've mentioned this book a lot lately, Mark Noah in LA gave this to me, but Relentless.
Uh-huh.
And the quote in it is, to have what you really want, you must first be who you really are.
It's good.
I mean, that should be the subtitle to the podcast.
Sounds so simple, doesn't it?
Yes. So back to you. I mean, we've got the rituals or the routine, I should say. And then we've got this creative side of you where you actually are a lot more creative than you originally admitted, doing virtual reality, not just virtual reality, but a virtual reality studio. I want to kind of intertwine some things I do know about you. In doing all of this, I'm going to pause for a minute and let everybody know, you recently did, I think it was a $19 million transaction.
I think the one you're talking about was 18.3.
Oh, I'm sorry, y'all, 700,000. That's a lot of money.
Just around in there.
Right. So that was through virtual reality tours and what you said, knowing your market, you knew the market, mm-hmm. and this was through someone who called. Yeah, I want to pull that story into this, but you did the virtual reality kind of storefront have anything to do with that? Was that the before or after?
The virtual reality storefront loosely had something to do with it, mainly because that particular property was a test case for getting into virtual reality. And my knowledge and background about virtual reality is what brought me to a point where this particular buyer, this client who bought the property, was my seller, my listing, and ended up fortunately representing the buyer as well. I was able to use, you know, just a simple Matterport tour that more and more people are using all the time, and it's pretty prevalent now, but use it in a way that it got this buyer super comfortable. He never saw the penthouse before he bought it. He did not see it until 2 weeks after he closed on it. It was a 2 week start to finish contract, no contingencies. And we got there because, frankly, of the Matterport tour. That's what got him over the hump of understanding the property, seeing it, being able to analyze it on his way, like do inspect the property basically from afar. And there was a lot more there in terms of the negotiation and personalities and everything else. But yes, that was a big part of selling that property.
So you were doing the Matterport virtual reality tours. And in doing that transaction was the impetus for going, wait a minute, we need to take this this is really powerful. Let's take this to the next level.
Actually, it was the other way around. I had already taken it to the next level, and that's what enabled me to get this guy to step up. He had so much comfort that this was something that I could walk him through and he could understand because of my background in it. And it's like a perfect example of know the business, know the market. That was a microcosm of, I know virtual reality pretty well now, and I know how to use it as a tool. So aside from that, I probably sold 3 or 4 homes of reasonable magnitude, 10 million plus, just because of that virtual reality showroom and transactions that otherwise wouldn't have happened because of how I was able to use the technology. So yeah, you take somebody who really was not tech savvy and got to a point where I could generate hundreds of thousands of dollars of commissions off of it. It was pretty cool.
That's impressive. I know I've heard the story a little, but tell us, I shouldn't even tell you all that, but how, because, you know, being brokers, we get calls all the time. This was a call. And walk us a little bit through how the call unfolded from a call to not even getting in the property, but you, I mean, let's bring home knowing your business, knowing your market.
Sure.
And developing the business, because that's a great example.
Yeah. So rewind, rewind about 6 or 7 weeks ago, and which is not a long time ago, but it was a very different feeling and environment and market in Aspen at the time. We were fresh off 2 months of total shutdown and nothing happening in the market, no contracts, no closings, I mean, nothing, and a pretty bleak outlook for the summer. And all of a sudden the phones started ringing with people wanting to rent in Aspen for the summer, and a few calls and emails of the opportunistic buyer type looking to get into Aspen in what they felt would be a once in a generation or once in a cycle, at least, distressed market. And it's interesting because a lot of calls, I started fielding more and more calls, and the momentum picked up of where it was pretty nonstop, actually, people looking for where is a deal? What sellers are in distress? I want to get into the market. I've been watching it. I know Aspen, or I even already own an Aspen and I want to buy something else. And this was one of those calls. This buyer did not own an Aspen, had not owned an Aspen, but had been visiting here for several years and basically said, look, I want a deal. I want to find something. I only want to work with listing brokers. I looked at your website, Andrew. Looks like you have a couple listings I'm interested in. Let's talk. So over the course of that conversation, we spoke about some of my listings, and then it became clear I might not be able to get him the level of discount he was looking for, I didn't think, on one of my listings. So I started suggesting one or two properties that I thought might be more negotiable, spec developers who maybe would be more negotiable. But Aspen is a market rich in sellers who don't need to sell, even when times are tough. That's typically the case. Yeah. So the distressed buyer onslaught was not easy to navigate because we don't have a huge, didn't have, and definitely don't now, a huge number of distressed sellers. So long story short, after about 5 1-hour-ish conversations, 4 or 5 days in a row with this particular buyer, I think I won over his trust and confidence that I knew the market really well. I knew what I was talking about, the business, and maybe he didn't need to go just to listing brokers, that maybe I would be a good representative for him to help him buy something. So we ended up making 2 offers on other brokers' listings that were both spec developers that were very aggressive, 40 to 50% off the list price. And we just didn't get there. We actually negotiated.
Well, you knew it wasn't going to happen, I'm assuming.
Right. I mean, but I also knew. So one of the things I've learned over the years is never say no to writing an offer. So when you have a buyer who says, I want to make an offer, don't insert own opinion going back, there's no way we'll get it for that. Don't waste your time. The offer, because now you're in. Now you've got a buyer who's engaged in the process, and it gives you an opportunity as a broker to show your skills. And you might not be able to negotiate 50% off, but I was able to negotiate 30% off on one of those listings. And I think that spurred him to say, okay, I've got a good horse here. Let's keep going, Andrew. Let's find something else. And we circled back to the Dancing Bear penthouse, the one that he ended up buying. That was my listing. And I said, look, the seller just reduced this from $30 million to $24 million, a $6 million reduction a few months ago. I think because the market is so dire and bleak looking right now, again, rewind 7 or so weeks ago, I said, I think he's willing to deal maybe. And I said, I don't know because I have not asked the seller. I don't want to know where he'll sell, but maybe you can get him into the low 20s or even 20. That would be where I think we could have an opportunity. And the buyer said, well, that's ridiculous. I'm not paying anywhere near that. And in fairness, the penthouse, 3,000 square feet, the record price per square foot sale in Aspen prior to this was about $5,500 a foot. So we would have been way above the record in the price range I was telling them about. But it's a special property. So we kept talking about it. And finally, I said, look, just make an offer. Let's make the offer. Let me take it from there and have the dialogue with the seller. So he made a $15 million offer, listed at $24 million. Fortunately, I know the seller very well, and he was not offended at all. He lives by the rule of 50% is having a buyer who's interested in your property, and that was the case. The other 50 is now finding a price that works for both. So the seller said, all right, good job. You got somebody interested in the property. Now we're $9 million apart. Let's figure out what to do here. So we ended up countering back and forth, and it took about 10 days of negotiating, because the buyer actually came up more than he said he would in price. And he came up to eventually 18. And he said, look, I'm already way above where I said I would be, Andrew. And by the way, I'm right about $6,000 a foot, a new record for Aspen. And I'm trying to find a distressed seller.
Yeah.
So we had that whole conversation. And the seller, to his credit, he was at 19. And he basically said, I'm way below where I want to be. I was hoping to be north of 20. And that was it. We were done. Nobody wanted to give or budge or do anything. And I sat on it for about 2 days. And then I called the seller and I said, look, I think I can get the guy to 18.3, and that's because the buyer had said to me, I'll go to 18.3 if you can get the seller to that price, just trying to bridge it. Yeah. And I talked to the seller and I said, 18.3 is a record. I know that you don't want to sell that low. And in fact, you'll probably lose money on this as a development project. I don't know exactly his pro forma, but probably. But you're going to set a record. There's a great storyline there that's what people are going to pay attention to.
Next, from episode 180, Sean Wolf, how to align and execute for success.
In that journey, you went again, you've now become a top agent. You are selling in a market that's the second home market. So there's not always a sense of urgency to deal with. How did you cultivate, I mean, in only 6 years, you've become incredibly successful. How did you cultivate that business so quickly and launch yourself once you got serious?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I really enjoy telling the story. And it all goes back to the previous brand. One thing I did do there that I'm thankful for is that I went to a networking event, and I think it was in New Orleans at the time. And, you know, I just wanted to see what it was all about. And I remember having dinner with quite a successful broker in Toronto. And he was telling me the story about this successful agent who was a little bit north of the city. And the agent was doing it purely through referrals. And I sort of tucked that away in the back of my head and floated for a little while longer. And then I arrive at Sotheby's and this whole new energy is there for me and for the business. And I start to think about, you know, how am I going to take myself to the next level? So just a little background, the area that I work in, as we said in Muskoka, you know, I don't know if any of you guys have heard, but there's a lot of snow in Canada in the winter. And as a result of that,
I think I heard something about that.
Yeah, you did, right?
Right.
So our lakes freeze. And if you're selling waterfront property, you're typically not selling in the winter, because if you can't see the water, which is the most valuable part of your experience here, you're probably not buying. So we got a bit of a blackout period from basically middle of December, early December, right through till April or so. So, you know, I did some business that year. I was doing okay. But the question was, is that what am I going to do with my time now in this 4 month blackout period to really, really help build my business? And I said, okay, well, I don't particularly enjoy sitting in the snow and shoveling. So I'm just going to go and get myself an apartment in Toronto, and I'm going to go to our head office in downtown Toronto, and I'm going to show up there, and I'm going to, you know, that's going to be my job. I'm just going to go and I'm going to sit there. I'm not necessarily going to do any trades, but I'm going to meet everybody I can, and I'm going to talk about cottage property and see if I can't create some relationships that will result in some business. And for me, it was hugely successful. My business has never been the same since that 4 month move to Toronto.
Wow. So you spent 4 months in Toronto. I bet you learned a lot about the business too from the other agents there.
I learned a ton. And, you know, it was reciprocal, because I found myself in a cubicle kind of in a high traffic area. I was in the hallway on the way to the bathroom. So I'd be mm-hmm. sitting there and they would see me every day, and agents I hadn't met before and agents I had would stop at my cubicle on the way to get a coffee or
the bathroom.
On the way to get rid of the coffee.
Right.
Right. So,
right.
So they would come and they'd stop by and they would inevitably ask me questions about Muskoka. And I'd ask questions of them and we'd be back and forth. And after 4 months, I mean, I had this whole great group of people that started referring business to me.
How brilliant. And you just went to Toronto. Like, I think a lot of people.
I just went to Toronto.
Nothing against it, but COVID has kind of changed that. A lot of people like to travel the country and go visit different markets, but you're meeting somebody once for a few minutes. But you just went to the same office every day, your biggest feeder market. What is it, 2 hours?
It's two away? Hours. It's 100% the biggest feeder market. So yeah, my job was to go there, you know, work on marketing, come up with ideas in there. But the main focus of that winter was to go there and meet referral partners, of which many of them I still work with today. And the idea was simple. The idea is that where I'm selling, there are very successful agents who've got very significant books of business and who've been in the business for decades in the area. Not only that, they grew up cottaging here. And as much as it's a decent sized community, they've had relationships for generations with their families. It's very difficult to break into a secondary market like that. Mm-hmm. But I knew one thing. I've got really, really successful colleagues in Toronto who have clients who belong in that circle where I trade. And so my only way for me to break in was to break in with them. And I've been able to do that, and it continues to provide great opportunities for me.
What a great story, because I think so many people would think, oh, I need to call people all day, or I need to send mailers out and spend thousands of dollars and hours that would get you no place like these relationships. When you were in Toronto, you went to the office every day, like 5 days a week, 6 days a week, 7 days a week?
I may have played hooky from time to time, but yeah, I was 4 to 5 days a week in some way, shape or form. Mm-hmm. And if I wasn't in the office, I was meeting somebody for dinner or, you know, going out for a cocktail with them on Friday night. I was just trying to continue to build relationships the whole time I was there.
Yeah. And when you were there building those relationships, did you ever think, this is dumb? This isn't going to work. What am I doing with my time?
You know, it was certainly a calculated risk, but it was a very small risk in my book. I actually very much believed that I'd be successful. And my bar was very, very low.
Yeah.
You know, if I got one or two deals.
That's enough.
That was enough. It paid for my winter and I had a little fun and I met some great people. The bar wasn't that big to overcome. And I more than surpassed it, to the point that I would say, I haven't done my numbers recently, but I would say 75% of my business is referrals.
I think a lot of times we think if we're going to get big results, we've got to do big, crazy things. But sometimes if you just like back off and simplify and engage and connect a little bit, that's what goes such, it went such a long way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, I'll give you another example. I took Ninja in November in Toronto. Yeah. Very few Ninjas, in Canada. And Ryan Seacrest was up to teach that class, and it was a phenomenal experience. I highly recommend.
I keep hearing about that.
Yeah.
I still haven't done it. I've done a couple of webinars, and I loved them. Okay, but so Ryan Seacrest, and
yeah,
then I've got another question I'm dying to know, but we got to hear this. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so it was to your point about the simplest things can have a huge impact.
Mm-hmm.
So, if and when you take Ninja, you'd be perfect for it. Mm-hmm. It would just reinforce all the things you're great at already.
Mm-hmm.
But, one of the things I learned there is that sellers and buyers want to know there's a process. They feel comfortable in the idea that there's a process. And I didn't have a great process. So I took some time when COVID hit to go, okay, is there a couple pieces I can add to my process that will help the buyers or sellers experience and relay to them that I have a process and it's something that they can follow and be confident in. So it was as simple as creating a couple of marketing pieces that I now send out to every single client that I work with. And I continue to automate that and make it look a little bit different. The point is, something as simple as one page can change your client's experience relatively quickly with a little bit of focus.
Love that. And you actually send something out about your process?
Yeah. Okay. I do. It's just a one pager and they can follow along. You know, they can see where they are in the process from, you know, the initial listing consultation to these days, a virtual open house to signing the contract to closing the transaction. It's all there for them. And they know exactly where they are.
I'm going to ping you to get a copy of that.
My process
is too many pages long. We could simplify a little. Of course, you could always make anything as short or as long as you really like. So how long, once you spent that 4 months, is that all it took? Or do you spend every 4 months every year with agents in Toronto? Or how did you kind of propel that? How fast was it and how did you continue it?
So it's something I continually do. If I'm not here in the heat of the market, I am, you'll quite often find me in Toronto or all over North America at this point, because I went from networking in my direct feeder market to connecting with great agents all over North America. Mm-hmm. So the networking and building relationship part of my business is very, very important. It continues to be. And when you're networking with agents, especially outside of your market, there's so many other opportunities that you can capture because everybody has their own way of doing things. There is a nugget or a piece of actionable information that is available pretty much in every conversation or in every relationship that we have. The key to it is executing against it. There's no question there's lots of great ideas. There are those who are willing to execute against those ideas, and those are much fewer.
So true. I already wrote this down, everybody, because he said it earlier, and I said, seriously, like, we're going to have to cut off the interview once you said this, Sean, but there are a lot of great ideas, but there are not many people who can execute great ideas. There's such truth in that, and that's what you've done. Originally, you took a small risk. You're spending some time in Toronto. Now you're traveling the country. You're also doing some other things, which lead me to the investment in yourself, which can often be scary. Tell us a little bit about your experience with investing in yourself.
Yeah, I've got the perfect story for you. You know, Canada sometimes is a little bit behind, and we can look to our colleagues in the South for more kind of groundbreaking ideas, but this one is not new to anybody, but the story's kind of cool, is that a few years ago, Sotheby's International Realty Canada developed a partnership with a company called Evoker. And what Evoker was doing, and they did a great job at it, were personal videos. It would tell a little bit about who you are, the market you're in, and they did a great job piecing together this 2.5 or 3 minute video. At the time, cash flow wasn't optimum, but I did have a few bucks put aside, and you know, I thought this was a great idea. It would make me look fantastic. It's something I could put out to prospective clients if I wasn't meeting them, because quite often my first introduction is not face to face. So this would tell people a little bit about me. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think it was about $5,500 US. At the time, because there was a group of 20 of us and it was sort of a trial.
Well, we need to know how many that is in Canadian.
I can't quite do the calculation anymore. About a million.
I'm giving you a hard time. We talked earlier, obviously, everybody, but you're like, you know, it was 5,500. I mean, 5,500 US. That's about a million Canadian, which we all know isn't true, but I love that. I couldn't leave it out.
Well, it's pretty close. It's pretty close. So anyway, it was a significant amount of money at the very least at the time.
Yeah.
And so it was a fairly a fairly difficult decision. Do I place the money here? Do I go with some sort of digital advertising? Do I go with print advertising? Where do I go with this investment? And what sort of level of confidence do I have that this is really going to return for me?
Mm-hmm.
And so fast forward, you know, it gets done. The video's great. It gets sent out. It gets all these views. You know, people would mention it from time to time, but I was still trying to pinpoint exactly where the return was. And so oddly enough, that return came this year, 3 years later. So I had a client who had, you know, $3 million plus dollar property, and they found my video online. Mm-hmm. And she called me up out of the blue and said, "Sean, I saw your video online. I think you're the guy for us. We really like you from your video. We want to meet you." And I said, "You found my video online? That's fantastic. That's great. Okay. I'm in. Let's meet." So went up to the cottage.
Right.
And met them, super nice folks. And fast forward, you know, 2 years later, it was a bit of a challenge. Things take a little bit longer up here sometimes to sell, especially if you're in that $3 million range. So, but she stuck with me. We had a great relationship. We still do. I consider her a friend. She'll call me about all her other real estate needs, and they are many. So it was a good relationship. But the return came this way, was that I had a client call on the listing and said, "We're really, really interested." I said, "Sure, no problem." We go and see the property. They take them twice. We go through the process. So they decide to put an offer, and they said, "Oh, by the way, we also have another cottage that we own now. We just built it a couple years ago, but we got one footitis in it. Like, it's just too small. The living room's not big enough. And we've got a big family. That's why we want the compound." "Sure, great. Let me go see it." They wanted top end dollar for this property, and eventually we got it. So now I've got both ends of the first one. I've got their property that sold in 2 weeks over ask. I then got one, two, three other properties so far, with two others that I'm talking with from one Evoker video. And we're talking, all told and still counting, over $11 million in sales.
Right.
And so the point of all this is that sometimes it's worth taking a chance, and, you know, not to be discouraged that the results don't come immediately, because if it was the right call — and we're not always going to make the right call — but if it was mm-hmm. the right call, over time, it's going to return in ways that maybe we couldn't even imagine.
And finally, from episode 204, Avery Carl, how to streamline and grow to triple your business.
So in that time, you're still just kind of like learning and helping friends out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when did you go, "Wait a minute, like, I really, the world, supply and demand, there's no supply and there's a strong demand for what I've got"? Mm-hmm. How did that transition?
So I got licensed at the beginning of 2017. I did about $10 million that year. And then 2018, I did 35, and it was 20. I was really trying to fight the being the short-term rental agent. I just wanted to, I was kind of chasing commissions still. Like, I wanted to be the agent that does everything. And it wasn't until I took a client that was a friend of mine's parents as a favor, and they ran me around and made me drive all over 3 hours here, 3 hours over there. I was spending like 12 hour Saturdays with these people looking at $50,000 mobile homes. And I looked with the mom for a long time. And then the dad showed up and on the, like, the fifth day, and asked me if I could find where the serial number — it's called something else, I don't know what it is though — still, where's the serial number on this mobile home? And I was like, I couldn't tell you. And they fired me. Oh, and then I thought to myself, I was like, why did I take this mobile home? Why did I do this? I sold $35 million worth of short-term rentals. I'm just going to stick to that. That is clearly where my money is coming from. So I'm not going to try to do all these other things. I'm the short-term rental agent now. And I just scaled it in the Smokies. And then I thought, well, how can I repeat this? And so Destin is another place that I grew up going, that I knew the regulations would be good because these are true vacation rental markets. So people have been renting these things just like Airbnbs since well before there was Airbnb. So long story short, I've got offices now in the Smokies, Destin, and Gulf Shores, Alabama. I have about 12 agents who work for me and with me in those markets. And we work only with short-term rental clients. And what we do also is we teach them how to manage those properties on the back end so that they don't have to go hire a property manager. Property managers in this space charge anywhere from 25 to 40% of your gross income, which can be, you know, your gross income can be upwards of $100,000.
It can be in excess of what you might have even, you can end up at a loss because of it.
Exactly. Exactly. So we teach our clients how to manage themselves, teach them how to set up their Airbnb and VRBO listings, all the automation tools and the tips and the tricks so that they can manage from wherever they live and use, you know, be able to squeeze every last dollar out of that investment and go scale their properties into, you know, more investments for their portfolio.
Wow. So you got into business, you moved to Nashville, decided to go to the Smoky Mountains because you're buying a home, but it can be an investment. That's back in 2013. Things unfold, you're learning about short terminals, 2016, you go from 1 to 5 properties. 2017, you're like, okay, you basically did $35 million of real estate being nice to friends. And then you thought, okay, but the commissions aren't really here. I'm going to be an agent. And then you did that and you end up showing mobile homes for 50 grand and don't know where a serial number is. Hours and hours with somebody. We can all relate to that in this, but this is like the show to talk everybody out of being a realtor at the traditional, but it really is. This is a great message. And you're like, wait a minute, I'm already good at what I'm good at. What am I doing? Like, let me go back. The narrower I go, the more abundance there appears to be. So, you know, harness that. It's amazing how the deeper and more focused you get, the bigger the opportunities get, which is basically what you're sharing with us right now.
Exactly.
In your business, you went from not only understanding your market, not only really doing high volume because you were so specialized with such a strong demand and a low supply of your knowledge, you delivered on that. Now you're at a level where you say, okay, I'm going to not just give these people, you know, the service, I'm going to teach them about it. And that's become a part of your business platform as well. You have webinar calls they can sign up for online. You got like a Calendly link. They go in there, they pick the day, they join in. And that's just part of being a client. Or is that a monthly fee or how does that work?
That is just the value add for being a client.
It's amazing. And so brilliant. I don't know another agent, maybe I do, but they haven't told me that actually says, hey, you can join me on a webinar call. And then people, you've got investors sharing ideas, sharing issues, learning from one another, just because of your clients. Now I asked you this question just because it would occur to me if I were listening. When your clients start networking and they're investors, are you ever worried that they're going to go do deals or that doesn't matter because of how your business model is and it just really creates more authenticity? How does that look?
So that's definitely a concern. So we have a Facebook group where they can all kind of answer each other's questions. And I kind of make it clear, like, hey guys, the reason that we don't charge extra for all this extra stuff is because the expectation and the hope is that when you go to buy another one, because you're so successful, that you'll remember who taught you how to do this and taught you how to be successful at this and you will come use us again. Now, we all know that sometimes clients are jerks and that doesn't always work like that. But, you know, of the 300 people we worked with last year, I mean, they think that I don't know about it. I always know. Nothing happens in Sevier County, Isn't Tennessee that I don't know about. Yeah.
That's what they don't know. We do always know. Yeah.
But I would say of the 300 that we've done, and that's just an arbitrary number, but ish, in the past year and a half, I would say maybe 10 of them have done something like that. So that's a pretty good margin. So, you know, you're always going to have the clients that do something like that and you can't stop it. And it used to really, really upset me. And it still does. I'm kind of like, oh, I just taught you how to bring a whole extra income stream into your family. You're going to do me like that? But okay. But it is what it is. It's just the business, I guess.
Well, you create this community, a culture. People want to keep coming back for more. And once you do that, it's hard to come back and get more.
Right.
And, you know, what I'm hearing is, we talk about this on the show a lot, but it's really resonating here, is what can you do for your client that nobody else can? It's clear. for you? Mm-hmm. There's so many people who say, yeah, you know, you talk about specializing, but I mean, I'm new and I just got to take whatever I can get, but you did the complete opposite. You did what the wise people say to do. And even when you tried to go against it, it was a drastic difference.
Yeah.
And what the results were. All right. So let's talk, repeat one more time for everybody. I want to repeat for 10 million your first year, which is already outstanding. Then you did 35 million and then you up to 56 million and now you're at 145 million.
Yeah.
Over the span of the last basically 4 years you've been in business. Mm-hmm. That is unbelievable. So now you've got a team of 12 agents in your, is that collectively ever your various markets, 12 agents?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So what do you attribute to your level of success? What is it that you have that other people don't have that gave you, I mean, you sounds like some grit there to me, but I don't know. Tell me what do you say it is?
Probably a little bit of that. And then just, my client saw what I was doing with my investments and trusted the system. And then also, have you read that book? There's this book called The Go Giver about, you know, the more you give, the better off you are personally. So, you know, we just have always just, that was always the business model. Like even before I even realized it was a business model, my friend said, oh, I want to buy one of these. Can you help me get it going? Well, yeah. And then when I was scraping for clients, I would somehow get these clients that were 3 hours away from me, by the way. The first 2.5 years of my career, I was doing most of my business in Sevier County, Tennessee, which was 3 hours from Nashville. I was driving there twice a week, sometimes 3 times a week to show properties. You know, I worked my tail off, really, is all there is to it. And I still do. You know, even though I have a lot of agents who work for me now, I spend a lot of time generating leads for them so that they're not having to, you know, I'm not just handing them these cold Zillow leads that they have to call and like hate their lives doing cold calls. I get these leads warmed up. They're ready to go. I hand them to them. And, you know, I work really hard on my systems and making sure that my team is super happy so that my team stays running the way that it should be.
So tell us a little bit about how are you able to have the level of business you have, run a team, and generate warm leads for your clients too?
So
your clients, your agents.
Yeah. So with real estate investing, it's a really small community. It seems like it's not, but it is. So there's lots of real estate investor meetups in different areas that, I mean, there's really one in every city. So I started out before I was technically a real estate investor, I would just go talk to people and I only had one little investment, but you know, I'd listen to, okay, this guy is buying mobile home parks. That's super interesting. And then they say, well, what are you doing? Well, I'm doing short-term rentals. And that was always something, that's something that was just recently kind of accepted as mainstream real estate investing. Even just 3 or 4 years ago, people were like, oh, really? How's that working? It was kind of intriguing. So I just kind of generated some buzz that way. And then now, you know, I'm doing a lot more of like actual marketing and outreach and doing webinars with people to kind of explain to them how you manage short-term rentals. And it's really more of a, now it's like I'm marketing to people who are looking for an extra income stream for their family, who a lot of people that want to quit their jobs, because you can quit your job on just like 3 or 4 short-term rental investments. So it's a lot of that. And I just do a lot of talking to people up front rather than handing a phone number to my team and saying, hey, call this number.
That's awesome. So basically the leads come in because it's such a specialized process. You're able to come in, you're bringing value that nobody else can bring. So once they see that value, you can't get it anywhere. They're ready to go and you've got the services in place to handle a high volume of deals and clients. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. If you like this episode, please share it with friends. To find more episodes, search Jerry Metcalf Podcast on any platform for podcasts or go to jerrymetcalfpodcast.com. That's JERREMETCALF podcast.com.